On April 30th, President Nixon announced on national television that a massive American, South Vietnamese troop offensive in Cambodia was in progress. "We take these actions," Nixon said, "not for the purpose of expanding the war into Cambodia, but for the purpose of ending the war in Vietnam and winning the just peace we all desire." These were familiar words to a war-weary public. Some felt that this decision was essential for attaining a just peace and sustaining America's credibility in the world. Yet others, particularly students, believed that this action represented an escalation of the war and a return to ex-President Johnson's earlier hopes of a military victory. As the fires from the artillery began to burn in Cambodia, a raging fire of reaction to Nixon's announcement was similar to that of other campuses across the nation. At noon on Friday, May 1st, about 500 students gathered around the Victory Bell on the Commons, the traditional site for rallies. A group of history students who had organized the protest buried a copy of the Constitution, which they claimed had been murdered when U.S. troops were sent into Cambodia without a declaration of war by Congress. 3 hours later, Black United students held a rally, which had been scheduled before Nixon had made his announcement. Some 400 people gathered to hear Black students talk about recent disorders with the Ohio National Guard on their campus. Word spread quickly that another rally, one to oppose the invasion of Cambodia, was scheduled for Monday, May 4th at noon. Friday night, one of the first warm evenings of the spring, several hundred students gathered in downtown Kent in an area with a number of bars known as the Strip on North Water Street. A spontaneous anti-war rally began in the street. Twice while the rally was in progress, passing police cruisers were hit with beer bottles. Afterwards, police stayed away from the area. Meanwhile, more people were leaving the bars. Many in the crowd chanted anti-war slogans, and a bonfire was set in the street. The crowd blocked traffic for about an hour and then moved towards the center of town. Some members of the crowd began to break windows. Primarily political targets were attacked, including banks, loan companies, and utility companies. After being informed of the events, Kent Mayor Leroy Satrum declared a state of emergency and arbitrarily ordered all the bars closed. Kent police, along with the mayor, then confronted the crowd. The riot act was read, and police proceeded to clear the area. People inside the bars were ordered to leave, forcing hundreds more into the streets. The crowd was herded towards campus with tear gas and nightsticks, which was in the opposite direction in which some of them lived. 14 persons, mostly stragglers, were arrested. About $5,000 in damage was done, and 43 windows were broken, 21 in one bank. On the morning of May 2nd, some KSU students assisted with the downtown cleanup. Rumors of radical activities were spread, and Kent's ROTC building was believed to be the target of militant students that evening. During the Vietnam War, students on many college campuses opposed the presence of ROTC and were often successful in forcing the removal of ROTC from their campuses. A dusk till dawn curfew was imposed on the city of Kent, and the students were restricted to the campus. At 5 p.m., shortly after assessing the situation, Mayor Satrum alerted the Ohio National Guard. KSU officials were unaware of this decision. Shortly after 8 p.m., about 300 people gathered on the Commons, where a few anti-war slogans were chanted and a few brief speeches were given. An impromptu march began, and participants headed towards the dormitories to gain strength. Large numbers of people joined the march. The now 2,000 marchers swarmed the hill overlooking the Commons and crossed the Commons. Then they surrounded the ROTC building, an old wooden World War II barracks that was scheduled to be demolished. Windows were broken and a few persons eventually set fire to the building. Plainclothes police officers were standing nearby and made no attempt to stop the students at this point. Firemen arrived on the scene, but their actions were abandoned because some of the crowd attacked the firemen and slashed their hoses. The blaze quickly died out. The firemen eventually regained control, and the building was ignited again. This time, however, the firemen arrived with massive police protection. Police surrounded the building and dispersed the students with tear gas. The firemen again got the fire under control. The crowd then moved up to the front of the campus. The students retreated to the Commons to find the ROTC building smoldering at both ends. Within minutes, the building was fully ablaze. The crowd then assembled on the wooden hillside behind the Commons and watched as the building burned. Many shouted anti-war slogans. In the first 2 weeks of May, 30 ROTC buildings would be burned nationwide. Armed with tear gas and drawn bayonets, the guard pursued the students, protesters, and bystanders alike into the dormitories and other campus buildings. Some stones were thrown, and at least one student was bayoneted. The question of who set the fire that destroyed the ROTC building has never been satisfactorily answered by any investigative body. May 3rd was a relatively quiet day. By now, however, the campus was fully occupied by Ohio National Guard troops, and armored personnel carriers were stationed throughout the campus. Although some students and guardsmen fraternized, the feeling, for most part, was one of mutual hostility. That morning, Ohio Governor James Rhodes, who was running for U.S. Senate, arrived in Kent and, along with the city officials, held a news conference. Rhodes, running on a law and order platform, attempted to use this opportunity to garner votes in the primary election, which was only 2 days away. In a highly inflammatory speech, Rhodes claimed that the demonstrators at Kent were the handiwork of a highly organized band of revolutionaries who were out to destroy higher education in Ohio. These protesters, Rhodes declared, were, quote, the worst type of people we harbor in America, worse than the brown shirts and the communist element. We will use whatever force necessary to drive them out of Kent. Later that evening, a National Guard commander would tell his troops that Ohio law gave them the right to shoot if necessary. This merely caused to heighten the guardsmen's hostility towards the students. Around 8 p.m., a crowd gathered on the commons near the Victory Bell. As the group increased in size, guards officials announced the immediate enforcement of a new curfew. The crowd refused to disperse. At 9 p.m., the Ohio Riot Act was read. Tear gas was fired from helicopters hovering overhead, and the guard dispersed the crowd from the area. Students attempted to demonstrate that the curfew was unnecessary by peacefully marching towards the town, but were met by guardsmen. Students then staged a spontaneous sit-in at the intersection of East Main and Lincoln Streets and demanded that Mayor Satrom and KSU President Robert White speak with them about the guards' presence on the campus. Assured that this demand would be met, the crowd agreed to move from the street onto the front lawn of campus. The guard then betrayed the students and announced that the curfew would go into effect immediately. Helicopters and tear gas were used to disperse the demonstrators. As the crowd attempted to escape, some were bayoneted and clubbed by guardsmen. Students were again pursued and prodded back to their dormitories. Tear gas inundated the campus, and helicopters with searchlights hovered overhead all night. At 11 a.m. on Monday, May 4th, about 200 students gathered on the commons. Earlier that morning, state and local officials had met in Kent. Some officials had assumed that Governor Rhodes had declared martial law to be in effect, but he had not. In fact, martial law was not officially declared until May 5th. Nevertheless, the National Guard resolved to disperse any assembly. As noon approached, the size of the crowd increased to 1,500. Some were merely spectators, while others had gathered specifically to protest the invasion of Cambodia and the continued presence of the National Guard on the campus. Upon orders of Ohio Assistant Adjutant Robert Canterbury, an Army Jeep was driven in front of the assembled students. The students were told by means of bullhorn to disperse immediately. Students responded with jeers and chants. When the students refused to disperse, General Canterbury ordered the guardsmen to disperse them. Approximately 116 men, equipped with loaded M1 rifles and tear gas, formed a skirmish line towards the students. Aware of the bayonet injuries from the previous evening, students immediately ran from the attacking guardsmen. Retreating up Blanket Hill, some of them lobbed tear gas canisters back at the advancing troops, and one straggler was attacked with clubs. The guard, after clearing the commons, marched over the crest of the hill, firing tear gas and scattering the students into a wider area. The guard then continued marching down the hill and onto the practice field. For approximately 10 minutes, the guard stayed in this position. During this time, tear gas canisters were thrown back and forth from the guard's position to a small group of students in the Prentice Hall parking lot, about 100 yards away. Some students responded to the guardsmen's attack by throwing stones. Guardsmen also threw stones back at the students. But because of the distance, most of the stones from both parties fell short of their targets. The vast majority of the students, however, were spectators on the veranda of Taylor Hall. While on the practice football field, several members of Troop G, which within minutes fired the fatal volley, knelt and aimed their weapons at the students in the parking lot. General Canterbury concluded that the crowd had been dispersed and ordered the guards to march back to the commons area. Some members of Troop G then huddled briefly. After reassembling on the field, the guardsmen seemed to begin to retreat as they marched back up the hill, retracing their previous steps. Members of Troop G, while advancing up the hill, continued to glance back into the parking lot where most militant and vocal students were located. The students assumed the confrontation was over. Many students began to walk to their next classes. As the guards reached the crest of Blanket Hill near the pagoda of Taylor Hall, about a dozen members of Troop G simultaneously turned around 180 degrees, aimed, and fired their weapons into the crowd in the Prentice Hall parking lot. The 1975 civil trials proved that there was a verbal command to fire. A total of 67 shots were fired in 13 seconds. Four students, Allison Krauss, Jeffrey Miller, Sandra Schroer, and William Schroeder, were killed. Nine students were wounded. Joseph Lewis, John Cleary, Thomas Grace, Robbie Stamps, Donald Scott McKenzie, Alan Canfora, Douglas Rentmore, James Russell, and Dean Kaler. Of the wounded, one was permanently paralyzed and several were seriously maimed. All were full-time students. Thank you.